Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam, later on the episode. But for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Coming to you live from the Ray Horseman Studio in North Hollywood, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Welcome to our Valentine's Day show, lovers. Love is in the air, or maybe that's just a smell of Doritos or Miranda Street. Anyway, matchmaker Katie Chen is here to explain the ancient art of pairing up human beings. Barbie and Ken were made for each other, but would they have been a couple without the helping hand of Mattel? And should you be bringing your sweetie this Valentine's Day to see the new film Isn't It Romantic? Well, we don't have access to that one, but we'll review the classic rom-com Pretty Woman about a wealthy man who falls in love with a prostitute he hired to help you make your decision. I'm Adam Felber. Think of me as a winged cherub flying about the studio with my bow and arrows, emptying my quiver in an attempt to keep the show in line. And now meet the woman who dodges every one of my shafts. Ew. Paula Poundstone! Welcome, Paula. And thank you to tonight's house band, euphonium player Angelina No.
Oh, now, my gosh. That must have been a hard name to be raised with.
She wasn't raised with it, I don't think. I think that... Angelina, were you married? Were you married into the name No or raised with it?
Married into No.
God. That's good, because when you're little, you know, you do something and... Your parents say, Angelina, no.
And you say, what?
That would just be a tough name. Poundstone.
So you said yes to no.
Yes.
All right.
That's love.
I bet she's never heard that one before, too.
That's got to be love.
You know, happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, to you too, Adam. I should have brought you like a little Valentine's Day, the kind that you get in the box from the Rite Aid.
You didn't.
No, I didn't. Do you know, I read a statistic that said last year Americans spent $751 million on their pets for Valentine's Day.
$751 million on their pets.
And that was just one guy for his bunny.
Yeah, that's one pampered bunny.
Yeah, just gave it a nice car.
Probably that Starbucks guy.
Isn't that amazing?
That's a
lot of money.
Well, it's
for
a little
pets.
Less amazing when you think about what people spend on people on Valentine's Day. $4.7 billion.
Wow.
On jewelry alone.
Wow.
Looks like $2 billion on flowers, $1.8 billion on candy, $1.9 billion on clothing, and for evenings out, like going to see the new Rebel Wilson romantic comedy, $3.7 billion.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not love.
No, I don't think it is love.
No, that's commerce.
Yeah, it's, I guess you're guilted into displaying love through commerce on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, the only thing that's a comfort to me about this is that they spend more on Halloween.
They do?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, that makes you feel better, doesn't it?
It does kind of pick this. Yeah. I mean, I kind of like Valentine's Day. Do you have any Valentine's Day plans this year?
I don't even know what day it is. I don't even know.
It's always the same day.
It's the 14th, but I don't know what the day of the week it'll be. I don't know what I'm doing that day. I don't care about Valentine's Day.
Not really your thing.
At all.
Wow.
I don't.
You know who I feel bad for?
Who?
Your pets.
Yeah, they get nothing.
Yeah, and
yeah.
Like it.
Yeah, they're going to be at the window looking at all the other pets,
yeah,
well, opening their presents. My pet's not a bupkis. What I'm thinking of doing is cleaning the floor over near the chimney of the pee that my cats have done.
So Santa Cherub can come down the chimney?
Yeah, just, you know, it's just a gift to them.
It's just a gift to them.
Let me clean your pee for you.
That is an expression of love of some sorts, isn't it? I imagine Jeannie and I will go out to dinner or something.
On Valentine's Day, you'll go out to dinner?
Yeah, maybe the night before. Or you know what, I'll probably make a nice dinner.
Oh.
This is sounding like every night to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I really got to re-strategize this thing.
Yeah, what I was thinking I would do for my cats is pet them and sift their litter boxes. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's sweet, but you do that all the time.
I do that every day.
Yeah.
Every day is full of hearts.
Have you ever done anything for Valentine's Day? I mean, I know you're not really the dating type.
No, I don't
date.
So
this show might be a little awkward for you.
I don't like sex, and so dating just seems misleading.
But you had to at some point figure out you didn't like sex.
No.
No? You just knew? You just always knew? Wonderful.
Yeah, the idea has just always really put me off.
It's never appealed to you.
No. Yeah. I'm hoping I can, you know, maybe someday I'll find someone for whom that's a match.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people out there who don't like sex. Maybe that person is your special someone.
Yeah. We could just spend time together, not having
sex. Like you do with all your friends.
Yeah. Just going over the bills and arguing.
Wow. I feel like that will make Valentine's Day all the sadder for you.
Yeah. I was thinking, I might start on my taxes that day. That's how I was going to handle Valentine's Day. No, I don't care about it at all.
Okay.
Hey, now, don't we...
We have a thing to talk about.
We have a thing to talk about.
All right.
No, see, I grew up in Massachusetts, and therefore the smell of confectioner... confection.
Was always in the air.
It was always in the air.
Yes. The New England Candy Company.
Yeah. I only found out this year that was what it stood for.
You didn't occur to you any other way?
No.
See, now, I used to rehearse for my improv company in Boston, right near the Cambridge... Necco Candy Factory. And for our listeners who don't know, Necco, until last year when they went out of business, was the company that had more or less cornered the market on those candy hearts with those slogans on them that everybody gives out on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah. Those are Neccos. Yeah.
Those are Neccos. Yeah, and the only other candy that I'm aware they made was this horrible, vile, coin-shaped roll called Necco
Wafers.
The worst.
Yeah.
I mean, it was barely a candy. It was like, here's medicine that won't do anything for you.
Yeah. It was more used for gambling.
Yes, because they were chalky in the size of poker chips, and they tasted about as good.
Yeah. And that way there, if somebody caught you gambling, you could go, no, eating these Necco wafers.
But so it's going to be, it's going to work. I'm trying to quit things that taste good. I'm just eating these all the time.
Well, but you know, I always, one of the only fun things about Valentine's was the goofy, you know, I remember we had one of the staff at my high school, Mrs. George. She would bring in a bag of those.
The hearts with the little slogans on
them. And when people would come into her office, she'd let them choose which one.
It's so sweet.
So by the time you got, hug me, several people had touched it.
Oh. Maybe this is where the beginnings of you not enjoying physical intimacy started.
Yeah, just that taste of the hug me after I've been touched by
That's been
by
touched
so many
by everybody
people.
Else in the class, yeah.
I can't even remember. No, it was like Kiss Me was one of them, and I forget what all the little words were.
It was a little provocative. It was a little racy for us kids, I thought.
Yeah.
Nobody ever, you know, by the time we were of an age where we might do those things, nobody gave a shit about those candies anymore.
Well, this was high school.
High school?
Yeah.
Oh.
People did.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Yeah, it was a great school.
Maybe you just matured more quickly than the others.
Oh, yeah. I lost my virginity in the second grade.
Wow. That's a beautiful Valentine's Day story.
Yeah. Didn't, everyone. Let's go on. In case, lest anyone panic, I looked this up. Don't panic about candy.
I wasn't even allowed
hearts.
To talk to the boys in the second grade.
Well, they're the worst.
Apparently, your teacher wasn't as strict as Miss White.
Oh, Ms. Wachtel was very Swiss.
Yeah, Ms. White caught you talking to the boys. You were out of the classroom, man.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Was she a nun?
No, it's just she didn't want anybody talking to anybody, you know, because it was class time.
But apparently you
were over near the closet.
I was kidding about the whole losing my virginity.
Right, my mistake.
Well, Ms. Wachtel, my teacher, would make me write, I will not be late to school 100 times.
No.
In a little assignment book. Yeah.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
It happened more than once.
Yeah. So I'm sure that didn't delay you.
It did not. I wanted to console our listeners. For one, the Necco company, the rights to make that candy has been bought by another company. They just couldn't ramp up production this year.
Oh.
And this year.
Oh, my gosh. Thank goodness.
But even don't even panic for this year, because this year the slack is being picked up by the Brax company, which had 20% of the market before Necco bowed out.
Oh, wow. This is really a relief.
I'm sorry.
We asked our listeners.
Yes. Thank you. You know, you're doing the good segues tonight, and I'm not.
Thank you.
We asked our listeners to come up with slogans that they would like to see on a candy heart.
Yeah.
And they responded just
if
on
only
Facebook
there was
page.
Time to get these to Brox in time.
Yeah.
And maybe
they had
there
some
will
very
be.
Good ones.
Yeah. For example, I was partial to the heart that might say Tri Poly.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people suggested that. I think it was just to get at me. Because as we said, you've been claiming that your t-shirts are made with a remarkably soft tri-poly blend.
My t-shirts, my Paula Poundstone t-shirts are made with a remarkably soft tri-poly blend. I thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, and I frequently bring up that a tri-poly blend is not a thing.
It is. That's why it should be on a candy heart, tri-poly.
Many people also suggested, and this was to my dismay, Adam's on every show.
Oh, that could be on a heart. Yeah, people would love that.
Yeah, that's another...
Yeah.
It's another sort of degrading thing that people tend to say about me because of you.
That's not degrading. Adam's
it
on
is.
Every show. You should take pride in that.
Yeah, but it's not really a compliment. They call you a genius and I'm on every show.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Laura Harland, listener yeah. Laura Harland, suggested that on a candy heart it say, eat something better.
I love that one. That's a really clever suggestion.
Linda Zoltan Wood proposed, bite me.
And I'm surprised that one's not there already.
And it probably is on the harsher candies. Sarah Anderson wrote, just eat chalk.
Well,
apparently
she's tasted
not,
these.
Yeah, she's not a big fan of the candy heart.
Now, there were some political suggestions. Jason Woe wrote, dump Trump.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one, but it's not very evergreen. Hopefully by next Valentine's Day it won't be a thing.
I have a bad feeling. We're going to be eating those year in, year out.
Joe Shelton had the simple message, impeach, which, let's give Joe credit, that would fit on a candy heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the Democrats are ignoring that. When Mrs. George offers them one, they're going to pretend they didn't see the impeach. They're going to say, not yet.
Not yet.
That's
not
what
time.
They're going to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Next Valentine's Day.
Yeah. They're going to say, I'm going to eat the tri-poly and Adam's on every show, and I'm going to save the impeach. Julie Gibbs suggested Thomas Kuhn was here. And by the way, that's UZ.
Yeah, I think she thought she was saving space by going UZ instead of AS. Or maybe it's just more woofable. Thomas Kuhn, as most people know, is our survivalist who's still missing. He was going to come on this show to teach us how to avoid a bear attack, and we are, as yet, still vulnerable to bear attacks. Okay, Kaz Kukuk had this. Oh, Kukuk had the.
Kaz Kukuk.
Or Kukuk.
Yeah. No.
Believe me.
Kaz, that's what you say when you got one of those hearts stuck in your throat.
Kukuk. Had the sweet suggestion, I heart PP.
Oh,
which
that's
either
beautiful.
Means it's either a beautiful compliment to you or a sign of a urine fetish.
Yeah, I was going to say he's a urologist.
Yeah, could be.
And on the flip side of that same
idea,
yeah, was
C.G. Wordsmith, who suggested do not resuscitate.
These are some very romantic.
Or there was Jason Hoffman's get tested.
Very romantic.
I guess you'd hand somebody that one after sex.
Yeah, get tested. Yeah. Yeah. Well. I just want to say, if that was your only protection,
I always keep a bag of candy hearts by the bedside just in case I get lucky.
Yeah, I have,
and they all say, get tested.
Yeah, they say if you eat one just after sex, you should be in the clear. Ann Darrow came up with the less than romantic go away. Brian Wyant wrote, leave me alone.
Okay.
These, by the way, are really turning me on. Rebecca Paley Marie suggested, let me sleep. And I am...
You're down with that.
I'm totally on her side.
Why don't you hand those to your cat?
That's one of the problems, I think, with sex in general, is that it often takes place during a time where you should be sleeping. And
it doesn't have to. You could say the same thing about just about anything you do at night.
It's often done in the bed. People
often
say
done in
go
the
to
bed.
Bed
so
with someone. You go
TV
to bed
watching
with someone.
Often done in the bed.
Yeah, but...
You could just not like sex without trying to find rationales why the rest of us are all wrong to like it.
All right.
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because
First sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally and everybody just piles on it and it's comfy. And yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix sleep quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the Midnight Lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're going to get it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while, we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now, I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at Quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge
jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on, and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that too. Like so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
Oh, they are so European. And you can get those kind of, you can get washable silk tops. You can get 14 karat gold jewelry and like all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing. They cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and a 365-day returns. That's quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
A detective came and knocked on the door. And I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me down there my whole life.
You can listen now to Season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Thank you. All right, what did Barb McDonald
propose? Barb McDonald proposed one of two.
One of two? What does that mean?
It means I'm one of a set of two, I guess, or you're one of a set of two, or I have two boyfriends.
Oh.
I don't know what it means.
I don't know either.
But it was mysterious and intriguing, yeah, and I'd like to see it on Heart. And Shannon Butler wrote, bye, Felicia. Nick McGray wrote, crinkle, crinkle. A reference to our own producer, Bonnie Burns, who is already, I can see behind you, twisting up. Look how she's folding up those papers.
Oh, Bonnie is.
If they were flat, they wouldn't make noise. But now that she's kind of dog-earing them,
yeah,
she's going to be crinkling them later in the show.
Yeah. So one of our producers, Bonnie Burns, who is supposed to be kind of a silent partner during the show.
Yes.
But she's become the Foley artist for the show.
It's amazing.
The unwanted and unnecessary Foley artist.
We never need it to sound like we are walking through fresh fallen snow, for instance.
But
and yet frequently that's a sound that somehow emits from Bonnie's corner of the room.
It's a crunch, crunch sound.
Crunch, 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 crunch. Then there's Michael Curley wrote, you are enough.
I think that's beautiful.
Or adequate.
He spelled it. He spelled it. The letter U, the letter R, and E-N-U-F-F. And I take issue with the spelling, but...
But I think what our listeners are saying is that they've paid attention to these candy hearts, and they often have irregular spelling.
Yeah, well, that explains a lot of the illiterates that we have walking about America.
Marsha Schauer said, take a number. And Tim Freeman, you might remember him. He was one of our first house bands playing the guitar.
Yeah, he was great.
He wrote, smash the patriarchy with me.
That's beautiful.
It would require a big candy heart, but I love that one.
Yeah. Well, that one would just go all around the side. It would circle. Now, a bunch of people proposed a whore mark, which doesn't sound particularly romantic.
No, but it was a it was an inside reference on this show, because if you remember, we had a tattoo removal artist, Dr. Rosenberg, I believe, on our show about a month ago.
And we talked about the tattoo that people get, which I was told was called a tramp stamp, the one just a...
In fact, he told us it was called a tramp stamp. He said tramp stamp on his show, and that's one of the tattoos that people frequently get removed.
Yeah.
And
people
one
in
of
the
our
70s got a super tramp stamp.
Right. Except it was placed very high. but one of our listeners took umbrage to that.
Yeah.
Remember, just one listener, not a lot.
They were very upset.
And you suggested an alternative just about a week or so ago.
Which was?
That would be less offensive.
I can't remember.
It was the one that's on that candy heart. Whore mark.
Oh, whore mark.
That was your suggestion.
Oh, that was me.
For an alternative to it.
Yeah.
And the reason...
It does sound better. It,
does it, though? Yeah.
She has the mark of the whore.
Hey, she's got the mark of the whore. You can see it rising over the top of her jeans. That's the mark of the whore, all right.
Pirate love.
But the reason I bring it up is because I got an interesting tweet from one of our listeners just yesterday, because I guess he just listened to that show where you suggested the whore mark, and he thought it would be fun to share his tweet. It was Gavin Trustwick.
It was not.
Yes, it was, and you'll find out why it was that in a minute. He wrote, "I think tramp stamp is fine. In Dutch, such a tattoo is sometimes referred to as an arsgave, which translates to ass antlers, mostly due to the tribal nature of some, most, all these tattoos. You know, they're pointy."
Oh, are they pointy? Yeah.
Well, they often have kind of a flourishy, maybe like ram's horn kind of look to them.
I do think it's true that for people who maybe felt that tramp stamp wasn't flattering,
that
when you consider the possibility of ass antlers... Suddenly, you might even name your firstborn tramp stamp. Suddenly, it takes on a sort of earthy charm.
You might as well just go with it. These are my three kids. You know, this is ass antlers,
whore mark, and tramp stamp.
And my son, tramp stamp.
I just want to say that if someone happens to leave off a basket of golden retriever puppies at my house,
yes,
and there's three of them.
You're going to name them.
That's their names.
All right. Now, I want to let our listeners
Hallmark.
Know. Hallmark.
Sit.
Ass antler.
Ass antlers, put that down.
Bad tramp stamp. Okay.
Tramp stamp, get out of the trash.
Back in the silent era, they had those little tramp stamps.
Oh, these are all very good ideas. By the way, I think if I were asked by Necco what I would want on my...
On your candy heart?
Yeah, if I were to write...
Do you have
an
idea for...
I have an idea for candy heart. Mm-hmm. I think mine would say, good listener, or let's talk.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, don't you think?
It's conversational. It's almost like what you'd find on a test in grade school.
What do you mean?
Like a teacher would write that on a test.
She would write, see me.
See me. Oh.
That was always, was when Miss White wrote, see me.
Yeah, Miss Wachtel, too.
You knew you were in trouble. What about you? Do you have a...
I would go with something like, help, or I'm being kidnapped, or... I'm your, spelled you are real dad. Like something that just kind of thickens the plot between people.
I'm your real dad?
I'm your real dad.
Oh, that is so romantic.
Well, it's not supposed to be romantic. It's not romantic, but it's interesting.
You didn't think Valentine's candy was supposed to be romantic? You thought it was just supposed to be interesting?
I like icebreakers. Get in my van.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Not so much romantic.
I would love that. Well, you know, it is all about love this week, and we'll be back with matchmaker Katie Chen and our review of Pretty Woman, and so much more to say about romance after this on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is supported in part by Away, makers of first-class luggage at a coach price. Away has the perfect gift for everybody on your list. Now, I want to say, I love my away luggage so, so much.
That you've been taking extra trips that you weren't really planning on as a result of having away luggage?
Yes, because I feel like I can get away much more easily now.
Uh-huh, that's great.
It does help me get away.
Yeah, that's great. I you know, luggage to me is like real estate. So luggage is very important to me.
Every inch is valuable.
Exactly. Well, I live half my week out of a suitcase.
And so if there were a kind of luggage that actually made more space for you through a patented compression system.
Oh, my God. So like I've already had an addition to the home.
Right, right. It's like an addition. Like it basically compacts your backyard and expands your home.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I would assume a bigger living room. That's what everyone wants.
Yes, yes. In this metaphor, you can have whatever room you want bigger.
I could play ping pong in that suitcase.
Yes, you could play ping pong in that suitcase. My point is that it compresses really nicely. Also, you occasionally charge your cell phones, don't you?
I charge my cell phones frequently.
Do you ever find yourself in a position where you don't have a place to charge your cell phone while you're traveling?
Yes.
What if there was a battery that allowed you to charge your cell phone on board the suitcase?
On my suitcase?
On your suitcase.
Oh, my. There's not.
Yeah, it's considered smart luggage.
Oh, my God. That'd be great. I had a suitcase once. It was so dumb. It went home with the wrong person.
Wow, that's a dumb suitcase. Well, this is a smart one. I don't know how smart it is, but it does have a removable rechargeable battery that you can charge your phones on up to nine times.
Yeah. That's a clever idea.
Yeah, and I just take it out at security, and then I take it out again when I get on the plane and put it in my pocket, and I never have to worry about my devices, you know, running out of charge on a plane.
Uh-huh.
And then you can stick it right back into, you can plug in your luggage when you get back to the hotel.
Plug in your luggage?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Or as I like to call it, pluggage.
Yeah.
And if anything breaks, they'll fix and repair it for you for your life.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good, because I am planning on being around for a long time.
Right.
And I like the idea that
you're going to break this company somewhere down the line.
Yeah, that my luggage would be with me the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for $20 off a suitcase, Paula, there's a special offer here. Do you want to read
the ad?
Yeah.
There's a special offer.
There's a special offer, and it involves your name.
All right. For $20 off a suitcase, and that's a good chunk of change.
That's a good chunk of change, because the prices are not too high on these suitcases.
Visit awaytravel.com/poundstone20. Mm-hmm. All right, let me say that again.
Yeah.
This is all with no spaces and all lowercase, lower suitcase. awaytravel.com/poundstone20 and use code poundstone20 at checkout. What could be easier?
It's really easy. Poundstone20 at checkout with no spaces, all lowercase.
Yeah, because this season, everyone wants to get away.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you so much. Now, Angie, you're terrific. The euphonium, by the way, and if you out there don't know what a euphonium is, it's like a little tuba, right? Would you call it a little tuba?
A baby tuba or
A baby tuba.
Oh, great. A love child. That's keeping with our Valentine's theme.
And we're going to move right ahead with that. Now, Paula, you're not, as we've established, in a search for a soulmate at the moment.
Not right now, but you never know when it could kick in.
Right.
I could just be a late bloomer.
You could be a late bloomer. And as you said, you might be open to finding a soulmate who, like yourself, is not into any of that kissy-kissy stuff.
Yeah.
As it were.
Yeah.
We're going to find out. Maybe there's a way to find somebody exactly like that for you.
It's a dream.
And for all our other listeners, because we're here to help you all. As a child, Katie Chen heard her mother and her friends trying to fix people up and decided she wanted to do that in a more structured way. She got a degree in psychology and today is co-founder of Catch Matchmaking. Please welcome Katie Chen. Thank you, house band Angelina. No. Katie, you're a matchmaker. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Paula's not in the market for your services right now, as far as we know. But if she walked into your office, what's the first thing you would have her do?
So what's the beginning, Katie? Someone comes to an office, or how do they find you to begin with?
Well, people find us through our events, or they look online. They're mm-hmm. sick of online dating or apps, and so they come in and fill out a profile so we can screen them.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is to sit down with you one-on-one mm-hmm. and figure out, well, is this realistic? Is this just not attainable? And assess if there's going to be a success rate if we work with you.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And so they're already telling you what they want? Is that why you say, is this realistic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, do people often come in with very unrealistic expectations about what they can get out there?
I think all of us have a sense of a fantasy in our head of who we want.
Right.
And we have a view of that, but it doesn't really get tested with apps and online. People just throw it out there and see if they can catch what they can get.
Right.
So with us, yes, you have to assess and see, well, this is what you want, but who's looking for that and how do you attract that? So.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really have to talk people down sometimes? I mean, you don't have to say things like, look, you're not like Donald Trump about this. You're not like, look, you're a six at best.
Right. I mean, there's just some things that are glaring and bizarre. Like I can think of this one person who came in and said, with a straight face.
Uh-huh.
Now, the curiosity got the best of me because in the profile, he said, okay, I'm looking for a woman to have kids with as soon as possible. And preferably, I like three sons because my skill as a math teacher is more suitable to teach sons that. I'm like, okay.
Wow. So he wanted to screen out daughters.
Yes. So yeah. I was very curious. I should have stopped there and said, don't bring him in. But we bring him in because I'm so curious. How do I do this?
Yeah.
How do I screen just sons for you? And he said preferably triplets. Because that's more efficient.
Triplets?
I can teach
or,
them all
conjoined
at once.
Triplets.
So all this guy cares about is teaching.
Details.
This
one
this
conjoined
guy,
details.
This,
triplets would be.
This guy wants to teach math to three sons as quickly as he can.
Yes.
That's all. That's his goal.
He would like to sign up soon.
Yeah.
Okay, so this guy comes into your office and what the hell? What else happens? It sounds like this is not the whole story.
Well, the first thing I have to note is how do we do this? He has an idea. He says women who preferably are not childbearing age range anymore because then we could do artificial insemination.
Yes, that's
and
right.
The chances are greater.
Yeah. In vitro fertilization, and there's like a centrifuge thing you could do where you separate out the 2X chromosomes from the XY chromosome because they have slightly different mass, right?
You can also, and this takes a lot of money, but you can actually have Huey, Dewey, and Louie implanted. Oh, gosh! Into your uterus. And
right.
And they are very receptive to math. That's something a lot of people don't realize.
But with terrible speech impediments.
Well, you have to put up with a lot of quacking.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Wow.
It would be horrible trying to hear them say algorithm.
So, algorithm! No. So he wants someone that's not of childbearing age. So
he wants an old lady who wants three sons pronto.
Yeah.
But he wants her to still look good.
Okay.
So preferably between the age of whatever he thinks
like
should still look good.
45. Yeah.
45, perhaps.
Right.
Because someone at least younger than him.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, okay, I have to keep a straight face because he's keeping a straight face.
Yeah.
Okay.
In all
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's you guys serious.
Do you still have the information on this guy, by the way?
No.
You're looking for material for future
work.
Shows?
I would.
No,
really,
Paul's
no,
like,
I kind of.
You like you like kids.
I love kids, and I would like, I'd like to have boys.
Okay.
And I'm not really a good math teacher.
No. But you wrote a book about, you know, you're math compatible.
I wrote some math workbooks with my math teacher from high school, but she did the math part. So anyways, what was this? How did you do it?
Well, in reality, I just told him, how do we present this to women to make it sound normal? Now, what do we
So
put?
You were kind of a downer.
Yeah.
Well, you got to be realistic because he's, you know.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I want to learn. How can I improve my
Were you
work?
Able to help this guy or what did he?
We set him up with a few people because in reality he said, it's okay, you know, I want this, but I think I just want to get married and have kids. And I'd be willing to not have to deal with all this criteria that I just came up with. So, so who wants to go out with me? Tell me. And now it's down to reality.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
so it's kind of like he went from a wall to steel slats.
To a fence. To a sign.
To drones.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. To more border agents.
Yeah, he was.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, you negotiated him down.
Yeah, yeah.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I, y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You the okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
All we're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain. Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it? Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
All right, let's talk about something that Paul and I were discussing when we were talking about you behind your back. Let's talk about image consultation. Do you have, you do that. Do you help clients look better than they are or should look? Do you do that?
Well.
Do you make them over? Is there a romantic comedy montage where they walk into a dressing room with you and you like sassy shake your head no on the first three outfits they come out with and then you shake your head, yeah, that's the one.
I think you're imagining, Adam, that this person is knows what they're doing and is occasion appropriate when he walks in or she walks in.
So there's some basket cases that come in here.
You know, the ones that need help in today's day and age, they just don't get that feedback anymore. Their buddy's not telling him, hey, what are you doing? And mom's not saying, hey, don't do that. So there's not that feedback, and we're left with checking them out when they roll in. Some of them are wearing something like PJs.
Guys come in their pajamas.
They
even
look.
No guys owned pajamas anymore except for in catalogs.
They want to look more casual.
So they want to look casual, so they wear pajamas?
They'll wear, if I have to ask them, are you going on a hike after this?
Mm-hmm.
And they're sweaty looking and they're wearing a hiking hat and things like that.
Hiking hat?
We need to give some image consulting.
Like a peaked hat or something?
So you would say to somebody, I don't think spelunking is a good first date.
I would have to let them know if you're trying to attract this certain person, you need to look a certain way.
Yeah.
Unless you're okay with me downgrading the type of match you want.
Oh, that's so good.
Or if you have to, if you are going on a hiking date, sure, wear occasion appropriate clothing.
Yeah.
So we're not saying be who you're not. It's just if you're going on a date, you have to be occasion appropriate.
Uh-huh. I see what you're saying. I always take issue with those remake shows where they spend hours fixing their hair, because I got news for you. You don't look like that the following day. That's great if somebody for television can fix your hair like that, but the problem is, what about when, you know, now you return to your regular life, and if you're only appealing with hair done a particular way, then you got problems.
You turned back into a pumpkin.
Exactly, that's what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't sound like that's what Katie's doing. It sounds like Katie's like giving practical tips for not looking as awful as they come in looking.
Ditto,
boy.
Yeah,
Katie, are you looking for a new associate?
Because he's inartful.
He's a fast learner.
Adam's really picked up on this this skill.
Yeah, this matchification process.
All right, so tell me about one that's been successful. Just, you don't have to say a name or anything, but just give me an example. Somebody came in and you were able to find a match for them, and how and why.
I think a lot of people have ideas in their head about how things should go.
Right.
They should let go of that because...
Yeah, they have to let go of that. So someone came to you with it and you talked them into letting go of that idea. And what'd you talk them into?
Well, I had this one couple I set up.
All right. So you had what?
I set up, and the date feedback, because we always ask, what happened? What's the scoop? Yeah. She let me know, I don't want to go on a second date. Everything went really great. He's funny. He's got a great job. And we got along, but I don't think I should go on a second date with him because he walked in front of me. That was so rude when we left that he walked in front of me.
Huh.
Oh.
I'm like, wait, what? Walked in front of you, and that's where the date ends? Yeah, I don't think he's considerate. I said, okay. Let's back up. You said all this good stuff about him.
Right.
Go on another date. Be open.
So you didn't spin a story like maybe he was protecting you from a bus or anything.
There could be so many reasons.
Okay.
Whatever those reasons are, it just, in the end, doesn't matter when you're looking for somebody.
Yeah. Right.
So going on another date.
I think I know who this woman is. She takes baby steps.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably why. It's infuriating.
Yeah. She's just so damn slow when she walks.
Just that mincing.
Just to get her anywhere, you have to walk ahead of her and create like a draft. Okay, so
fast forward a couple dates later, and one leads to the next, and they're married. And I was inviting to the wedding.
Wow. Now, at the wedding, when they walked down the aisle, was she like way behind him? Because I think I know
she was
who this
really
woman
slow.
Is. Yeah.
They had to play the wedding march six times
just
to get her down an ordinary church aisle.
Baby steps, Betty. I know this woman. Yeah. All right. So they went on another date and then...
They got married.
Yeah. So she was...
that's a success story.
That's a great
really
story.
Yeah. Now, since you do review how the first dates went, you've got to have some amazing nightmare stories of first dates, do you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Just tell us the worst one.
There's some of them could just be so bizarre that we had to make videos and put them up on YouTube just so that people know. Common sense is probably not so common, so don't do these things.
Do things like what?
Okay, just last week, we had a woman who went on a date, said, ordered appetizers, two entrees, and goes, you know, I'm not that hungry. Do you mind if I just take the rest home? It's just bizarre.
Okay, that's bizarre.
Did she take out Tupperware?
Was that a plan?
Yeah, was it clear the whole time that she was not going to eat that food that night? I could see doing that.
I've heard of women who use dating apps as a means of paying for meals.
Oh, no, I didn't mean that. No, that would be corrupt. I mean that you sit down, you look at the menu, and you think you're really hungry, and then the anxiety of the moment gets to you, and you don't feel so hungry. I could see that happening. But did the guy pay for the food?
He did.
Oh, well, that's weird. Do you recommend that, by the way, on a first date, having the guy pay for the food and not splitting it?
To keep it simple, I think just whoever invites... you out should pay.
I agree. Whoever invites you out should pay.
Oh, so then when there's two people, one person is just like, no, you go ahead, you ask. No, you ask. Well, no, you ask.
She doesn't lock them in a room together until somebody asks for a date.
No,
that's not
how
you do it, is
done.
It, Katie?
No.
It is not how it's done.
Oh, I thought it was how it's
done.
So you have a file then, right? People come in and they say, well, you know, I'm looking for love, and you assess them. And then other people have come in already. And so, you know, you go into your index file and you're like, oh, I think this would be good for this person. Is that right?
Yeah, we compare basically the requirements, the expectations, and see if the other person would appreciate you. And if there's a chance,
well, like
if there's
word.
Like a 75% chance, we think, okay, if you sit in front of each other, there's going to be a chance of some connection.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would present both parties to each other. And the worst mistake people make, I think, is not going on a first date even.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we present them with a softball, they refuse to go out.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So they're being too picky just based on a description.
What else? Are there any red flags that let you know that somebody who's come to you really isn't ready for a serious relationship?
I think when people are still living with their exes.
Oh, yeah.
And when they're still living with their exes?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
That can happen. There's,
really?
Oh,
but
yeah.
They tell you with a straight face, I'm living with my ex because, well, it would be wrong to try to split up our child caring duties. It would be too complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So if we just lived together, it would be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really realize, saying that out loud, how does that sound to a potential match?
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we can't go back to my place because my ex is there.
Yeah, right. Because my wife and kids are there. Yeah, that's a Valentine's don't.
Right.
What are the do's and don'ts of the first date?
The first mistake I think people make is not even going on the date.
Right.
But beyond that.
Getting to that date.
Yeah.
Like, A, you should probably wear pants. Right, if you're
probably
a guy.
Probably a good idea.
There you go.
And the other part is when they're on the date, they are just being too serious. It's almost like an interview where you just feel like there's a list of questions being fired off, mm-hmm. and you can almost see the check marks going on.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. Feeling sort of judged or
instead of being so serious, people should really try to do something that they actually have fun doing themselves too.
Like, what kinds of things do you recommend people go do on a first date?
Ping pong?
Something that they're hopefully a little bit familiar with,
uh-huh.
And they're not fumbling around. So,
like surgery. Like if there's a surgeon,
right?
You know, you would say to the.
I don't think you would take a date to like open heart surgery where you really need your full attention.
What if you're OBGYN,
right?
And you've gotten the call,
right?
And you go, you know what? Why don't you come with me? This will be fun.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
It's something unique. They won't forget you.
Yeah. Here, you hold the left leg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Get the head. I have.
I dream this would happen to us someday. Okay. Now let's take it from that do's and don't stuff to something a little more personal. How deeply into the whole sexual thing do you get? Like, in terms of like openness or even interest in it, like if
you
you're matching Paula up with
that?
Somebody, you don't want to match her up with Warren Beatty. For one, he's too old for you.
Well, yeah, I was okay. A younger Warren Beatty, I made a rare exception to the rule.
Really?
Yeah,
but
maybe.
Like he famously had, the reason I brought him up is he famously had like just an enormous sexual appetite,
yeah,
which might not be completely compatible with somebody who does not want to ever have sex.
You know what? Maybe a little bit of me would have rubbed off on him.
And a lot of him would have rubbed off on you. Pretty much every hour
I think
or two.
If I was with Warren Beatty and he had a tremendous tremendous sexual appetite,
mm-hmm.
I think he might have dieted.
Really?
Yeah.
You might have put him on a diet.
Yeah.
Katie, does that kind of strategy work, or do you try to get into that thing just like a little bit?
I think a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to come up.
Mm-hmm. Right. But do you ever get like people who say things like, I want someone who's going to love me, nurture me, and have sex with me while I'm wearing a bear costume? Like, do you get stuff like that?
You know,
like the bear costume.
That's
really
probably going to be any time now. I've been in business 10 years, and
furries
it doesn't
are
surprise
thing.
Me.
Oh, furries are a thing, yeah.
Oh, they're people that wear bear costumes? Is
well, no, animal costumes. Yeah. They're called furries.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a thing.
This is making.
And for some people, it's not a sexual thing, and for some people, it is.
Some people, wearing a bunny suit is a sexual thing?
Yeah. You know what I advise you not to do? Do not go home and Google furries.
Yeah.
Just don't do it. And if you do, don't click the image tab.
Is it?
Just promise me you won't do this, Paula.
This just makes no sense to me whatsoever. But, okay. You know, I'm happy for them. Don't get me wrong.
I am too.
Did you already know, Katie, about the furries?
Did I know about the furries?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. No.
So I'm the only person at the table.
I'm learning new from you guys.
Okay. Yeah. She's a matchmaker. Oh, wait. Oh, great.
Are you phonist?
The euphonium player knew about the furries.
You did? You heard about the phone. And how about you? And look at that. Tony Anita Hall
knew about the furries.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm not alone.
Yeah.
Let's go out later, you two.
Yeah. You guys are a match.
We've got this amazing koala outfit that you guys need to see.
I have a theory, by the way, and try this in your work, Katie. I have a theory. I have a theory about matchmaking, that there are people who like the tiki birds at Disneyland, and there are people who don't. And they never, you can't pair them up.
It's all the tiki lounge to you.
Yeah. You can take a tiki bird lover and put them with a tiki bird lover. But I think, you know, I know that a lot of times it's, you know, it's money and sex and people who are workaholics that pull couples apart. But I think if you were to further investigate on like divorces and breakups.
It would really come down to the tiki room.
Tiki birds lovers and not tiki birds lovers.
How do you feel about that, Katie?
I think if we added that, it could increase our success rate.
I'm certain that it would.
Yeah. I think there's got to be a little extra appendix to that, because I think there are people who don't particularly like the tiki room at Disney World and Disneyland, but do suffer through it because it's the only place in that entire theme park where you can get that pineapple soft serve ice cream.
No, it has nothing to do with this.
Really?
This is pure tiki bird love or not.
All right.
And by the way, in case you're wondering, I like the tiki birds.
I'm okay with tiki birds.
Yeah. There. Yeah. Mm. Is that your hand on my knee?
That's not my hand.
Happens just that fast.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Katie Chen, for guiding us towards a soulmate. Paula, what advice can you give our listeners about matchmaking?
Angelina, can you give me some love background music on your euphonium? What a house band. For God's sakes, go on the first date. You're not going to get married without a first date unless you have a really good catalog picture. Have fun on your date. Don't ask interview questions. Don't take it too seriously. On the other hand, if it's between telling knock-knock jokes and getting your date's genetic map, go ahead and ask, what hours can you work and do you have your own car? Balloon animals can be fun. And on a second or third date, you might wear a remarkably soft tri-poly blend t-shirt.
Katie Chen is a matchmaker and co-founder of Catch Matchmaking. Thank you so much for being on our show, Katie.
Thank you, Katie.
The cat of the week is Tank from Washoe Valley, Nevada. Hey, Paula, your terrific book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, which is a mouthful of a title, is now out in paperback, and it's also available for download, and it's an audiobook now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was the reader alouder. It's unabridged and directed by Jorge Reyes, who, by the way, has been our house band on the saxophone many a time.
Many a time. He's also a cousin of our producer, Ray Horseman.
Yeah, they're very close.
Very close. Anyway, your book is one of the 5 books nominated for an Audie Award, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And it's made it to the semifinals for the prestigious Thurber Award.
Thank you. Yeah, it was, you know, people listen to it, tell me they enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's an enjoyable book. Now, I know you hate self-promotion, so let me give you another assist. Fans of your book and you will have a chance to see Paula Poundstone live upcoming in Atlanta, Georgia on February 22nd at the Buckhead Theater and in Coral Springs, Florida, February 23rd at the Coral Springs Center. You can find out the rest of Paula's tour dates on her website, paulapoundstone.com.
Oh, man. Thanks for taking that load
off
me.
Got it, friend.
I'm always amazed that you commit my travel itinerary to memory like that.
Yeah. It's not weird or anything.
No. I don't feel stalked in any way.
No. Because I wouldn't be stalking you.
Will you call me late at night and go, are you in Coral Springs yet?
I just want to keep tabs on you to make sure that I know that you're safe.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, house band Angelina No. Oh, man, I love me some euphonium music on Valentine's Day. Always have.
Oh, yeah. It brings out the best in the holiday.
It sure does. Now, Paula, as you know, when a hit movie sequel is about to come out, you and I tend to get together at my place and watch.
And we watch the original.
Right.
So that people know if they should watch the sequel or not. But
right.
This time it's a little bit different.
It's challenging because on Valentine's Day, there's a romantic comedy coming out. It's Isn't It Romantic with Rebel Wilson. And the whole plot of it is that she finds herself accidentally inside a typical rom-com.
Yeah.
And,
so what we did was we watched a typical rom-com.
Right, because they never have sequels because they live happily ever after at the end of rom-coms.
Yeah.
So we decided, and we found out that you and I both have a massive gap in our cultural literacy in that neither of us had seen the highest box office grossing romantic comedy of all time, 1990's Pretty Woman.
Wow. And I would have thought Manchester by the Sea or The Iger Sanction.
Neither technically a rom-com, are they?
Oh, yes.
Oh, they are?
Oh, yes.
The Iger Sanction.
In fact, I am making a balloon animal of Clint Eastwood.
You're not.
In the Iger Sanction. Yeah. I am. You're not going to. Yeah, it's going to be good.
I got to say, you've done one twist in it, and
already,
and
it is
a
like
pink balloon.
Clint Eastwood.
So it's in the neighborhood of Eastwood already.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. This is from the Iger Sanction.
I don't think that is.
Yeah, it is.
I don't see in what way. That could be a very specific part of Clint Eastwood. I think we could put that on a website. And,
yeah. Well, you know, and when he's dangling from the side of a cliff.
Right. Oh, that's him dangling from the side of a cliff. Now, is that just one part of him dangling from the side of a cliff?
Oh, it's the part so far that I've made so far.
So basically,
far.
You have to make every part of Clint Eastwood that isn't his genitals.
No, this is. Oh, is that what you were thinking?
Well, yes. In point of fact, that hot pink sausage shape with the little bulbous thing at the end kind of suggested a. Okay.
No.
All right. Well,
here
this is different.
You can see the cliff.
Okay.
Do you see the cliff?
I don't. That doesn't look anything like even a semi-coherent balloon animal. You know, I think we could profitably move towards reviewing this movie at this moment.
Okay.
I'm ready.
I'm gonna
twist balloon animals.
I'm going to have to go back to this.
I think so. Yeah.
Because I'm not getting the cliff the way I want it.
No, you're not getting anything. It's not a balloon animal.
That's
Paula.
Not true.
It's a kind of a pretzel shape. And now it's popped. Well. I couldn't be less disappointed that that happened.
You know what? I was not careful with the ice axe.
Yeah, I guess
in the
so.
Iger sanction.
Yeah,
oh
the
my
ice
gosh!
Axe, Iger sanction. So
I was so close.
To return from that just pointless detour, you and I got together in my backyard last night and watched the living hell out of Pretty Woman.
Oh my gosh, did we ever?
And that was such a huge hit at the time. It was the movie that launched Julia Roberts to superstardom.
What year did it come out, Adam?
1990.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't think people were in their right mind in 1990.
I was amazed. I mean, my wife had warned me that she had liked it at the time, but that I should be prepared to be.
Yeah, Wendell, my assistant Wendell, told me it was a good movie.
He did?
Yeah.
I wouldn't advise that you be alone with Wendell at any point.
No. I think what happened is, you know, there had been, I don't know, something about it apparently charmed people in the 90s, but I would say that if you go back to it, maybe it won't be as charming. So the movie begins at a party at Richard Gere's lawyer's house, right?
It's a fancy party, yeah.
It's a fancy party, and his lawyer is...
Richard Gere's lawyer is played by Jason Alexander, and they're obviously very close, and they're both terrible people. They establish right away. He breaks up with a long-term girlfriend, Richard Gere does, on the phone, kind of rudely, at the party.
Yeah. And he's some sort of a, I don't know what that's called, but a guy that...
he's Mitt Romney.
He buys
companies and chops them up and sells them.
Right. Exactly.
Which is what Mitt Romney did.
Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And but he doesn't.
Capital,
except for
it.
Richard Gere doesn't do anything bad to a dog on his car roof.
No, he doesn't.
So that's who Richard Gere is. He's this very rich guy, a bit icy. He's a little bit icy.
Icy rich man goes to L.A. for some meetings to take over some other poor saps company.
Right.
And he gets lost.
Yeah.
And picks up.
He pulls over, and these two hookers see him.
That sounds like the beginning of a joke.
One of them, one of them is Julia Roberts,
and the other is Laura San Giacomo, made famous in the indie film, I think, like a year before Sex, Lies, and Videotape, and she's been in a lot of stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that. So they are friends and roommates, these two hookers, and they are talking about. They see the car slow down, and it's a very fancy car. He's taking his lawyer's car. It's a very fancy car.
It's a very fancy
car. And so the two hookers right away are like, well, we want the guy in that car.
Right.
Right? They haven't even seen the guy. We want the guy in that car.
Because he's rich.
Because he's rich. Well, exactly.
It's a bit, I mean, hooking is a business.
Yeah, well, precisely. Yeah. You don't have to tell me.
Yeah.
And
what?
Oh, my God, the blisters. So he pulls over.
I learn something every week on this
he
show.
He pulls over and he asks directions of hooker.
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts. Mm-hmm. And
I think, yeah.
He then takes her in his car, and she says a couple of, it turns out she knows how to drive, and he doesn't really know how to drive.
They end up at her hotel, at his hotel.
So they drive to the hotel.
Yeah.
He ends up asking her to come. She tells him it's $100 an hour.
Right. And then he decides to spend a night with her, but not intending to have sex with her. And I think most people have seen the movie, so I don't know if we have to recap the whole thing, but I think it's important that even though he says we don't have to have this, you know, have sex together, she eventually puts moves on him, and he does have sex with her. So
it is
an act of prostitution that launches the movie.
You never actually see sex in this movie. When the credits rolled, it turns out it was made at Disney Studios.
Yeah, well, I've looked into it. It was a Disney film.
Disney
had an imprint
film
called Touchstone, I think.
Yeah.
But that was essentially a Disney film.
When they say touch, what they mean is...
Touch gear.
But
what
was very strange about it was, all right, so the premise being, you know, the hooker and the rich guy who's a little bit, you know, impenetrable, you know, get together.
And she's incredibly penetrable.
And she's very penetrable.
Yeah.
Ka-ching, ka-ching. And, all right.
So
okay.
We're supposed
but the way they, so now she's in his world of this fancy rich hotel. And of course, she's dressed like a hooker. And so all the rich people stare at her and she doesn't really fit in as a hooker. By the way, if you've been to LA, there is no place where a person dressed.
Can't dress like a hooker.
Right. There is no place.
You can dress
place.
Like a hooker
yeah.
everywhere.
No one
However,
cares.
In this movie, as soon as she enters high society, it's like we're watching a Three Stooges movie vision of high society. Like,
yeah.
Everybody turns around and looks at her like these old ladies going, oh my word, I can see her neck.
Yeah.
You know, it's just craziness. Yeah.
There's a lot of, I think there's like a stock sound of, ooh.
I expected that was a high fight to break out.
But what I thought was sort of funny was, okay, so the movie maker has to figure out a way to make it clear that she's not refined.
Oh,
and so the way they do it,
a thousand ways.
Is she doesn't eat. She only eats with her hands.
And like a squirrel. She furtively grabs a croissant and runs off the screen.
That's true. She actually stepped outside
to
eat a croissant.
Outside to go, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And then,
but like
but
you
the
do
other
when you're not
is,
rich.
The other thing is, she didn't sit in a chair. And when he finally told her to sit in a chair,
yeah, like,
she did.
He basically said, get your ass off the table. We
have
a lot of
chairs. She was sitting on the table.
Yeah.
And so she sat
like
in the chair.
Like non-cultured people do.
With one leg up. And I just think that's so weird that that's how they were showing that she was a hooker.
Yeah.
Was that she didn't eat with silverware and she didn't sit in a chair. And I'm not sure that these are prerequisites to be a hooker.
No. I think for one, they're showing that she doesn't fit into that world, which is why everybody's going, oh, all the time.
Yeah, but they
also
couldn't tell when she walked through the lobby of the hotel. They couldn't tell that she didn't sit in a chair and couldn't eat with a fork.
They couldn't see that. Or could magically transform croissants into pancakes.
At one point, she's eating a croissant. And
caught this. I did not. You're good.
And then she's eating a pancake. And she's eating the pancake, holding it in her hand with no butter or syrup.
Like
she's,
one might hold a croissant.
She just picked it up.
If one was a rabid squirrel.
Okay, no matter how much, I don't care if you're fucking a guy every hour on the hour and getting paid for it. You wouldn't eat a pancake with no syrup and no butter. It's just not tasty.
I think that's a good point. That's a fair point on this movie.
It was a very strange choice. Yeah. Like, and now, look, she doesn't know how to eat a pancake?
But then she gets introduced into society, and it all goes into this, like, My Fair Lady, you know,
right, like
Cinderella story kind of thing.
She goes shopping. By the way, Larry Miller, funniest thing in the entire movie.
Absolutely. Your friend Larry Miller absolutely
wonderful.
Chews up one scene where he's helping her get one of her two makeover scenes.
Where she goes to buy fancy clothes. But, you know, there is a scene where, you know, they're in bed together. And again, you never see them having sex.
But they talk about the fact that they have had sex. In fact, the only rule that they have, that they both have, is no kissing on the mouth. Because that is a certain kind of
intimate. That's too intimate. Meanwhile.
Too intimate.
Yeah. Meanwhile, she'll take what he has in her mouth. But,
Yeah. Oh, I think that's the first thing they do, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's kind of going down on him. Like,
yeah,
in that
she
first
does go. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I,
but that's just casual.
Can I take a sidebar for a minute? Because I want to.
That's just a casual. That's like
a handshake to a hooker.
That's a getting to know you blowjob.
Exactly. Right.
That was in The King and I.
Yes, it was.
Getting to blow you.
Getting to blow all about you. Yeah, that's a wonderful, wonderful scene.
I just want to say, okay, there's a scene where...
Well, her dress is so complicated that that's really the only way to do it in The King and I.
They were...
And he's wearing easy access harem pants or something, so...
There's a scene where they're laying in bed and they're just talking, which, of course, says to viewers, look at what a beautiful relationship is building because they're not touching each other. They're just laying in bed talking.
Oh,
and she explains how she began to be a hooker. She had some falling out with her mother. Her mother felt that her boyfriends... She had a couple of bad boyfriends.
Yes.
And then she had like a falling out with her mother and she sort of ran away to Los Angeles. And she said, well, you know, I had a job as a waitress and I had a job doing something else, but I couldn't make enough money.
Right.
And then she met this woman who turned her on to being a hooker. Now, I would argue this was 1990.
Yes.
Okay. I lived in Hollywood in the 80s.
Right. Well, we already established that you would occasionally have salt for dinner with sugar with dessert.
I didn't have a lot of money. My point is you can get some roommates. It's probably harder now. I mean, we're going to have more hookers now than we used to have.
Right.
Because it's probably harder now with how expensive things are. But you could get some roommates.
Right.
And you could live in Los Angeles. The idea that her only alternative was to be a hooker.
And she clearly didn't like doing it.
Yeah,
either.
She said she cried the whole time.
The first time she cried the
time.
Whole time. Yeah,
whereas
it was a sad story.
When she blew Richard Gere, she only cried for the first few minutes.
Right. We didn't see any of that.
No, we didn't see that. But
flip
okay.
over some cards here because I told you this last night after I'd seen the movie because my mind was a little bit blown. One of the reasons I avoided seeing it was because my first job out of college in the early 90s was teaching at an after-school program in Winchester, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And the third and fourth and fifth grade kids, especially the girls, had Pretty Woman as one of their favorite movies, especially like the fourth and fifth grade girls. That was their favorite movie. Like almost every one of them had seen it. And I just kind of knowing what the outline of the plot was, I was like, well, that's one movie that I never want to see.
Yeah.
And then
and
having
the
seen it, it was exactly, I was right not to watch it in the 90s.
The whole time we were watching last night, Adam just kept going, the second and third graders saw this.
Yeah, I was just like, it's 20 odd years later and I'm still outraged.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's how I feel about The Birds.
So wait, do you have your notes from last night? Because I remember I had you write one quote down that was just amazing.
Oh, I know. Okay, Okay, there is a scene where they have something akin to sex anyways. I don't know if it was like Bill Clinton sex or if it was something akin to sex on a piano because he's a piano player.
Oh, I think he's dropping down on her on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's working his way. Who knows where he ends up, but he is definitely working his way down her.
Yeah.
It's a returning to favor.
Yeah.
But
well,
for no money.
You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, they're not keeping score, but still.
Yeah, well, she is.
But, okay, let me just say this. She is so lucky that he was not a euphonium player.
Yes.
Number one.
Yeah.
And B.
Yeah, I don't even want to turn around and ask, but I am guessing that Angelina is right now signaling, yes, it is impossible to have sex on top of a euphonium.
I would strongly suggest that it is not possible to have pleasant sex on top of a piano.
I think you're right.
It's a hard surface.
Uh-huh.
And
it's very high.
Hard surface
it's higher
sex
than one's waist.
Doesn't look appealing to me. I mean, if hard surface sex was appealing,
yeah.
Then when someone had a pool, they would drain it.
Why?
To have sex on the cement on the bottom.
But there's plenty of hard surfaces that one can get to in one's house
that would not require
draining a pool.
If you really like hard surface sex, there's nowhere better than the deep end.
I agree it's not a very appealing idea, but as we've established, sex doesn't appeal to you.
No, it doesn't appeal to me. But if it was like, if my spine was being thrust into a piano, it would appeal less to me.
I hear that.
The other thing, there's a scene where they're in the bathtub. There's actually two bathtub scenes.
They spend
a lot
of time having sex, which let's stipulate she is being paid for the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she was being paid. They made a deal. He asked her to stay for the week. He has some business reason why he wants her to go to like some function with him. But he asked her to stay for the week, and they calculate how much that'll cost.
Yeah.
And,
I think it's $3,000 for the week.
Yeah. Anyways, at one point, they're in the bathtub together.
Right.
And for some odd reason, I still don't understand why they did this. But you know those horns that they blow at like a football game or something? What are they called?
Horns?
Like just...
Vuvuzelas? Like the things that you...
There's a bathtub scene.
I saw the bathtub scene. I did not see the vuvuzela.
They're cutting to the next scene. Okay. And when they do so, you know how sometimes they'll bleed the sound from the next scene into the...
Oh, and there's a horn being blown.
They did that with a horn, and it sounded just like one of them had farted in the bathtub.
Oh.
It took me a minute to realize that's not what it was.
You were probably so confused. You didn't even mention that to me last night.
No, I believe
the next scene, and I want to bring this up, was the big polo scene.
And I was thinking,
and again,
you know,
we're in Three Stooges land. This is what rich people do. They attend polo matches.
Oh, I know rich people that do go to polo matches.
Really?
The whole thing, for people who are familiar with Sweet Charity, the movie was sort of like Sweet Charity without the realism. At one point, this is when they have the big, I don't know in what act it was, but they break up at one point and then come back together again. And when they break up, it's because the week is over.
Mm-hmm.
And he now, you know, they both feel sad that the week is over.
But they can't admit it to themselves or each other.
Right.
So they part.
They're about to part, and he offers her an apartment, and he would, you know, stop by
to be a
occasionally.
Yes, yes.
And she tears up and storms out, and she says, "Never has anyone made me feel as cheap as you did today."
Yeah.
Which is a little, doesn't ring all that true for someone who went for him because of the car that he had.
And who has made her career walking up and down Hollywood Boulevard.
Because she didn't feel that waiting tables was profitable enough.
Yeah.
You know, you can get an extra shift waiting tables.
But I think what she was saying is that because her emotions had become involved.
Yeah, because she'd kissed him on the mouth.
She'd kissed him on the mouth.
We now know.
So I think what she's saying in that moment is because I've kissed you on the mouth. Now, when you treat me like that, it is the most degrading thing that's ever happened.
Okay, well, keep in mind, she accepted money and clothes for sex.
Yeah, it was a transaction. She got her emotions involved. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the same thing happened to me when I used to sell sunglasses.
You know, she was a little bit like how people are with religion sometimes. You know, when it was convenient to her to be to feel cheapened, she felt cheapened. And when it wasn't convenient to her, she
didn't
feel cheapened.
Wow, you have no sympathy for her.
Cheapened.
See, now I want to
take on
him.
And then he says,
yes.
And this is the line
this
that
is
you
the line that I responded
I never
to.
Treated you like a prostitute.
Yeah, now
he actually
that
said
line
that.
Made me want to throw my TV out the window.
And we were
and I would
already
have had to take
in your
my
backyard.
TV inside to right. throw it out again. Yeah. Yeah, because that's just, in every way, he treated her like a prostitute.
Yeah, like the way he bought clothes for her. Listen, if this is the best rom-com ever made...
It is considered one of the best. It's got a lot of the elements that, like, one of the things that you notice in rom-coms, and I noticed it years ago in things like When Harry Met Sally, but it's been consistent all the way through, is that all the other characters talk about nobody but the two main characters. When you hang out with your friend, like, let's pretend we're in a rom-com together.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And this is about you, and I'm your best friend.
Okay.
And I'll be like, Paula, you just don't ever seem to be able to stop doing what you're doing, do you, Paula? It's really funny. Now ask me something about myself.
Okay. How are you, Adam?
Oh, you know, I'm no Paula Poundstone. Wow. So do you love him or not?
So, no, but she talked to the roommate about what the roommate was going to do.
Very briefly. It's a nod towards sketching in a life.
No, I think this was really more Julia Roberts, who likes a lot of... The other thing, by the way, she had this big red curly hair. It was very, very beautiful hair, but never did it flatten in any way from sleeping. And the same thing, Richard Gere's hair never moved. He had a hair helmet the entire time.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a rom-com thing. Yeah. Like, they're like romantic superheroes.
Yeah, they really were.
They're always in the same costume.
They were impenetrable in most ways. Mm-hmm.
Except one.
Anyways, I would... the last thing I would say is that the sex must have been incredible, the sex that we didn't see, because there was nothing appealing about him at all.
You do not find him attractive.
No, it's not that he wasn't attractive. It's just as a partner. I mean, keep in mind, she's had sex with lots of men at this point.
Right.
As a partner, there was nothing about him...
That didn't have to be drawn out like you were pulling teeth.
There was just nothing compelling about him as a human being.
Well, it's arguable that what was compelling about him was his money.
Well, exactly. But, you know, he never treated her like a whore.
No, except for paying her.
And I just want to say...
She did not have a whore mark.
I just want to say this. No tattoos.
Not a
single
one.
In the entire film, no tattoos.
Well, it was a different time. One more thing I want to point out is that this catapulted Julia Roberts to stardom.
Yeah.
There was a host of other women, known and some unknown, who turned down that role before it went to Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Including Karen Allen, Molly Ringwald, Meg Ryan, Diane Lane, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Daryl Hannah. All turned down Pretty Woman. A couple of them because they thought the script was degrading.
Really? I think the script was degrading, and I think Karen Allen made a mistake.
Because she just had to wait around for that next Indiana Jones.
Yeah, how many years could you wait? Indy!
you might have a point there.
Indy, do you mind if I do Richard Gere while I wait?
And I know this particular subject was important to you. She got a Academy Award Best Actress nomination for that role.
Well, yeah, but you know what you have to know is what were the other nominees that year?
Tony Anita Hall, would you look up the other nominees for Best Actress in that year?
Yeah. And keep in mind, she didn't win.
She didn't win.
I mean, you know, you're looking for... There's five in each of those categories, right? To come up with five, really, Academy Award-winning
performances
in 1 year is challenging.
So maybe she
made it.
I mean, she wasn't bad.
No, she wasn't bad.
I don't find her convincing as a prostitute.
No, I think part of the thing... Well, first of all, I think a lot of prostitutes don't have good teeth.
Yeah, and she had great teeth. Gigantic teeth, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had very healthy skin and good teeth.
Absolutely.
A lot of good makeup even before.
Yeah, but just her demeanor didn't seem like, like her friend Laura San Giacomo. She's like, I bought her as that.
Yeah, you bought her? Well, then she was a hooker.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that year nominated was Kathy Bates for Misery, Angelica Houston for The Grifters, Meryl Streep from Postcards from the Edge, Julia Roberts for Pretty Woman, and Joanne Woodward for Mr. and Mrs. Bridge.
Did Joanne Woodward turn down this role?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kathy Bates?
Kathy Bates came very close and even took a screen test for it, but ultimately decided that she was too good for Richard Gere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
Yeah, there were a lot of people. Dame Judi Dench turned it down.
If this is the best rom-com ever made...
Or it's one of the rom-coms
ever
made.
Then I would discourage people...
From going to see the new one.
Yeah.
So ultimately, do you give Pretty Woman a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
I give Pretty Woman a, I like it that you're choosing thumb.
All right, we'll make it more appropriate. Do you give it a thumb in or a thumb out?
I give it a, I give it a flaccid.
A flaccid, a dangling thumb.
A dangling part
of Clint Eastwood hanging from a cliff.
How about you, Adam?
What about me?
What's your recommendation?
What's my read on all this?
Yeah.
All right, I've got to give Pretty Woman an emphatic thumbs down. I think it's a movie whose time has passed, even if it was great at the time. However, I would say, give Isn't It Romantic with Rebel Wilson and Liam Hemsworth a try, because it sounds like that movie is deconstructing all the things that are kind of typically wrong with romantic comedies or cliche about romantic comedies. So I say, why not? Get some of your dollies this Valentine's Day in the movie theater. All right, well, nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. We'll be right back after this.
Welcome back to WKEP at Night. Up next, looks like we've got a PSA from local forest ranger Duck Newton.
Do I start now or?
Yeah, I lean in, Duck.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, I wanted to address the unfortunate situation that... Okay, listen. Two people, good people that I and a lot of y'all have known our whole lives are dead. Torn to shreds by...
A savage, bloodthirsty beast that defies human comprehension. If you'd like to know more, stop by the Cryptonomica, Kepler's premier museum of the macabre. Just off highway...
Come on. We just wanted to warn y'all, to beg you. If you see one of those things out in the forest, don't fight. Don't scream. Run. Run as far as you can.
Doc, it's almost midnight. Listen, folks, if you see anything, please go to thelamplighter.org and let us know. And get behind a locked door tonight.
Anything else we need to... Oh, they're leaving. Okay, well, that's thelamplighter.org, and stay safe out there, Kepler.
Greetings, I am Plek Dexsetter, contacting you from the Zik Squadron, which is, frankly, sort of crappy, but I'm here on a heroic mission with my trusty crew, C-53.
Heroic feels like an exaggeration.
Okay, sure. And Security Officer Dar.
Plek, don't put me in your stupid recording.
Well, and we're all traveling aboard our trusty starship, the Bargerian Jade. Bargy.
What? Sorry, I'm awake.
It's fine.
I was just flying while asleep.
Hey there, this is Alden Ford. I play Plek, and we are so excited to announce that our podcast, Mission to Zix, is now part of the Maximum Fun Network. Our third season launches on Max Fun on March 20th. Binge seasons 1 and 2 right now. That's Mission to Zix, ZYXX.
Our show is artist-owned and listener-supported. In fact, that's the Maximum Fun motto. And one way you can help us raise funds to keep us going is to buy one of our Maximum Fun T-shirts. Yes, we have Maximum Fun, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone T-shirts. They're only available at maxfunstore.com, and they come in a variety of sizes, not just one.
No, many sizes.
And
a
they're
variety
really
of
nice.
Sizes.
Yeah, they've got our
nice.
Logo.
Yeah, Adam was wearing it last week. There's the logo on the front, and on the back is a memorable piece of advice, and I believe it is, never take your kid to an orthodontist who is sending his kid to college or putting on a deck.
Yeah, which is great. It's a Poundstonian piece of advice and a nice longhand kind of font. And it's handsome. You'll want it. Get it at maxfunstore.com.
And you can tell a friend about Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
You could.
Before we say goodnight, if every listener tells a friend about Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, we can have 10 more listeners in no time.
No time at all.
For those of you a little shy to do so, here's some simple sample dialogue.
You wrote some sample dialogue?
I did.
Oh, this is great.
Listener's friend, you look absolutely radiant. Listener, why thank you. I listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and it leaves me with an irresistible glow. That's a helpful tip.
That's a helpful tip. I don't know how often that's going to come up, but if someone is accused of radiance, you might want to reply in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to submit a theme song or if you have an idea for the show, email us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. And you can follow both Paula and me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by that lady, Paula Poundstone, and yours truly, Adam Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Captain Crinkle Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Technical direction by Ray Horseman. Special thanks to tonight's house band, Angelina No. And thanks again to our guest, Katie Chen. Our head of security was Jonah Knuckles Glickman. Transcription services for the show are provided by TranscribeMe. For your special Paula Poundstone-specific discount, use code PaulaPoundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.